A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. I know it's midweek. I know we just had an Arscast Extra. We're going to have an Arscast Extra on Friday after the Southampton game. But yesterday, Arsenal sorted out the contracts of four players whose futures had to be decided by midnight last night. Those were Dani Ceballos, Pablo Mari, Cedric Suarez and David Luiz. There are some discussion points, I think, to be had around three of those anyway, not four. But with me to do that is Clive Palmer. You'll know him from the Arsenal Vision podcast. Hi, Clive.
Hi, Andrew. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. Just very briefly, the Dani Ceballos one is the easiest one just to get done. He's on loan from Real Madrid. Extend him a few more weeks. He goes back to Spain, finds a new club next season, and everybody's pretty happy.
Yeah, I mean, whether you love him or not, and I don't love him, but he's doing a job for us, and I think he's got his eyes on either Betis or Valencia back in Spain. Mm. And I think the Spanish league, I'll say, suits him. I don't want to say that. I think he's done fine for us, but I don't think he solves the problems that the Arsenal midfield has. But he's doing a job, and given the fact we've got issues with Xhaka, it makes perfect sense.
Right, so I'm going to go at these in kind of reverse order in terms of how they make my brain hurt. Which, you know, goes from zero to about 3,000 on the pain, the painometer.
Stay calm.
I'm calm, don't worry. Pablo Mari is a player that we got in on loan from Flamengo in January, and it seemed a bit of a complicated deal because he came and he went and it was all done and then it wasn't done. But, you know, on paper, we've got a 26-year-old central defender, left-footed, good on the ball. He's got physical presence. He's tall, probably good in the air. And I say probably because, you know, I've seen him play twice for Arsenal and the few minutes that he got against Manchester City before he went off injured. The question about, you know, why we couldn't just have bought him in January is another one, and maybe we'll move on to that in a little bit. But, you know, on paper, when you look at the Arsenal defence, when you look at some of the players that we have there and the need that we have to rebuild, this one seems, you know, the least, I was going to say problematic, but that's not the word I want to use. This one makes a lot of sense.
It does. I like him as a player. I like what he brings to the team. Even in the game against Man City, you could see that the players were giving him the ball. I felt he was the lead of the back four until he went off. You can see him directing traffic. You can see him dropping off to receive it. And so all the things that he showed, I thought, that's exactly what I want to see. It's hard to judge him on his quality in that game. But you know, he's got the behaviours of a centre-back, of an Arsenal-type centre-back. Also, being a left-footer, he's got the Xhaka light switch from left to right, and he's got that first-time pass out to left-back really easy because it's just an easier angle for him. I like having a lefty in my centre-back partnership, and also he can play in the back three, which if you look at William Saliba at St Etienne, he's also spent time in the back three. Saliba's also spent time as left centre-half, but primarily the right centre-half. And you can look at this and think, well, okay, if we were ever to go to a back three like we did for a period against Brighton, which I failed to pick up initially, that type of player can easily slide into that left-hand zone. And since we've lost Monreal, we've lost that player, really. And I don't think Tierney should be that player to sort of cover the centre-back role. So it makes sense footballistically, Andrew, for me. And personally, I like the player, but how can I say it's going to work because we just need a bigger sample size.
Yeah, that's very true. And look, the career trajectory of Pablo Marie has been fairly unconventional, you know, to go to Manchester City where, you know, I think he said himself he didn't even work with Mikel Arteta because he went there and then was immediately loaned out to the Spanish second division a couple of years. And then he did a year in the Eredivisie. So, you know, he's had some experience. And then he went to Flamengo, who are by some distance the best team in Brazil. Best team in South America. So I think what he was able to do there is demonstrate his footballing abilities. I'm not sure that week in, week out, his defensive qualities were being tested in a way that would give us a good idea of what kind of a defender he is. And the other point that I was going to make on him, which I've completely forgotten right now, what was the point I was going to make on him? Oh, yeah, just in terms of, you know, we look at that and we think, well, that's not the usual pathway to Premier League football. But it is within the realms of possibility that a guy's career can develop and what have you at a different rate than you might normally expect. There are such things as late bloomers. So while I think it's impossible to say that it's a good signing, it does tick the boxes on paper. And we've got to hope that, you know, what they saw in him, you know, on the training ground that made them decide to make it a permanent deal, are things that we're going to see on the pitch in the coming years for Arsenal.
Yeah, maybe. I think you have two different ways of coming up. I call it the red carpet way via the academy route, where you come up in a cottaged environment all the way through your career and you arrive at the first team and everything's done for you and it's all great. Sometimes that can lead to some bad attitudes because as soon as you hit a rock in the road, you struggle in adversity, right? We have many of those in academies today, and it's one of the byproducts of academy training. That last piece around the mentality of a player is really, really key. And you do see some players that I think suffer for that cottaged upbringing. I think with Marie, when I was doing my YouTube scouting, which I always do, and for those that follow me, you'll always know I'm throwing things out there. I think I watched him play for against Liverpool in the World Cup final, and I thought he did really well in that game against a very potent attack that may be on holiday a little bit in that tournament, but I thought he stood up. And if you can run with Mane and Salah and work out how to adjust, given the fact that they are quicker than you, and not be caught out too many times, that to me was my measure to where he could be. And I felt, if you look at him pre-lockdown, look at him post-lockdown, I felt he kept himself in real shape. He dropped some weight. I think I really was disappointed that he got injured in that Man City game, because I think he's going to confirm my suspicions that he's not a bad player. So, yeah, I'm hoping that one works out for us going forward.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth pointing out, you know, we've had some really bad luck in terms of injuries. Gabriel Martinelli injured, Pablo Marie injured, Granit Xhaka injured, although I believe back in the squad and should be available for the game against Southampton. Bernd Leno, of course, and thankfully, while it's a bad injury and keeps him out for the rest of the season, it's not as bad as we first feared. So it is one of those things that Mikel Arteta has had to deal with. You know, speaking of injury, we also signed a player in January on loan, this time from Southampton, who are playing tomorrow night, Cedric Suarez. This one, I can see the logic in having a deputy or competition or depth when it comes to the right back position, because the options that we have there are imperfect. You know, the Maitland-Niles thing is a little bit confusing to me, because I can't countenance for a second the idea that Maitland-Niles sort of went to Mikel Arteta and put his foot down and said, I don't want to play right back for this team ever again, so don't pick me there. You know, he might have been a little less forthright, but, you know, we did have options there in January. Socrates had played there. You know, it's not great, but it's still an option. We had Maitland-Niles, who could play there if he was told and picked to play in that position. And what we're looking for, I suppose, is Hector Bellerin to get back to his best, and maybe he can't do that if he's having to play every game at right back. So on paper, again, Suarez, Premier League experience with Southampton, even if he's a player they didn't particularly want to keep. I think maybe the issue really is the duration of the deal. He's 28 years of age, and he's got a four-year contract. So would concerns you have about this one be more related to how long the contract is than the profile of the player?
how long the contract is and at what cost. I think he's already cost us more money than he needed to have so far. I mean, we paid nearly £1 million loan fee for a player that Southampton were going to lose for free. We paid his 65 grand a week wages for the whole of this calendar year, and he hasn't kicked a ball for us. So that's already cost us a sum of money. So it's not really a free transfer. So we've basically paid around £5 million for the opportunity to sign Southampton's right back at 28 years of age. Now, his career path has been pretty good. He obviously won the Euros with Portugal, and he's been at Southampton 5-6 years. And he's a decent right back. Let's not mess about it. He's a decent right back. I think what we're struggling with at the moment, this is part of a rebuild, but we've seen different ways how the right back's being used. And currently, we've seen it played as a more an inverted role. So I don't know if he's suited to that. I've seen Bellerin play that inverted right back role, and I personally don't think he's suited to that role. I think he's much more a dashing right back that likes big distances, repeat sprints when he's on form and in the best health. I feel that he struggles in that inside role. He needs more of a midfielder right back, somebody who's comfortable with the ball, receiving on both feet. And guess what? We've sort of got one of those in Maitland-Niles, which really frustrates me that he doesn't recognise that there's an opportunity in the potentially in the way Arteta wants to play that suits my skill sets, allows me to use my defensive abilities that I've improved over the last couple of years, but also the fact that I've been brought up as a midfielder, I suit this role. And it's a shame that he doesn't recognise that. It's a shame that he's brought in AD Ward as his agent, which tells me he may not be around for much longer, because when you hire AD Ward as your agent, that's not for a comfortable time at Arsenal. That's because you may be looking for the departure now. So I think that this is, that player is really not defined in his role within the team or the squad, and I'm not too sure how much longer he's going to be at the club and could be used to raise some funds.
Yeah, it is such an odd one because, you know, he played the first couple of games under Arteta when Arteta came in and was looking to play that inverted fullback, you know, dropping in as a central, almost a central midfield player. And he did well. You know, he did well. And maybe, look, maybe he's got ambitions to be a different kind of a player, and he just doesn't want to be what, you know, what the opportunity is giving him at Arsenal.
Andrew, you remember when Theo was pining to be a centre forward?
Yes.
And we could see that he was doing fine on the right wing, crossing for Van Persie and Giroud. I want to play in the middle. And he went in the middle and just got lost in there and eventually went back out to the wide side again. I'm looking at Ainsley and thinking, don't Theo yourself up, will you? Don't do this to yourself. When you walk into the room, recognise the opportunity that's available and seize it. And then develop your career from that moment on. And I just feel he's missing an opportunity here.
Okay, well, look, that might come out in the wash at some point when we either move on from Ainsley Maitland-Niles or move him on and he does his first interview somewhere and explains exactly what his thinking was at the time. And maybe Arteta will explain his thinking about not using him. So let's move from Suarez to David Luiz. You know, I could see logic in hanging on to David Luiz until the end of this season because everything is so strange. You know, the football world has been turned upside down, topsy-turvy, and what we've seen in the first couple of games from an Arsenal point of view is that, you know, injuries are prevalent and certainly more prevalent than we had hoped. So having some squad depth is important. You know, there is still a trophy to play for, and having experience in your squad is also important. So, you know, I could see the logic in keeping Luiz until the end of this season and then saying, well, thank you very much. This has been an expensive, if not a hugely successful exercise. The very best of luck to you. Off you go. Have a nice life somewhere else. You seem like a very nice man. People like you and all the rest. But let's just take this opportunity to do it the easy way, to cut ties the easy way. And, you know, I'm a little bit, am I flabbergasted? I'm not necessarily flabbergasted, but I'm sort of disappointed that we're going to have another year of David Luiz at Arsenal.
Yeah, so let me give you my thoughts, because I think there's a couple of sides to this. I think if you look at it footballistically, you can say, okay, I've got a young 18-year-old centre-half coming from France, potentially going to buy another young centre-half because with Socrates and Mustafi in the last year of their contracts, Chambers injured, Holding returning, and could really do it alone. You could see there's a space there for him, and with Mary injured. So football-wise, you think, you know what? He's probably worth another year, as long as we're not paying £200,000 a week for him. He's worth another year. And he can be the babysitter to bring these guys forward. And I get a level of leadership, expertise. He's won every trophy there is to win. I get a level of that within my squad. And there are, you know, lots of good conversations about him off the pitch. That is a very positive influence. But then I look at the other angle. And I look at the fact that there's been lots of unbelievable articles recently, and we listened to Arteta speak. You listen to him talk about the culture change he wants to bring into Arsenal. And I've often felt that our culture recently, Andrew, has been defined by stupidity, stupid decisions, players that do stupid things on a football pitch, the lack of seriousness. And I look at David Luiz, and every now and again, he absolutely goes against the culture that I would like to see, you know, implanted in the club. So you have a situation where you have a young squad, where you have a young group of players that do need the right type of professionals alongside them to help them develop. And then you look at the things that we want to rid ourselves of. We want to rid ourselves of players that play what they like and do what they like when they like. We want to rid ourselves of high paid players using us as a place for pensions, for example, so they can stay in London, live in London. We want to rid ourselves of that. We want to be more serious. We want to be more, raise our standards. And I just feel David Luiz goes against that culture to change. And I think a lot is going to be on him now to get his head back on, because football has a very short memory. Two good games that people forget. But one bad mistake and people remember. And that's what he did against City, where before the lockdown he was playing really well. So I think it goes against the culture change, the culture shift. And he has got the work to do to get Arsenal fans back on side, because I think there's a fair few that are really questioning that decision.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's fair to say that Arsenal have made a decision which isn't universally popular among many fans, if my timeline is anything to go by, albeit one that, I can see a certain amount of logic to it, because, you know, there are question marks over all the players. I mean, I just look at him and I see a player who, when he feels like it, as you said, he can do fine. But the City game, you know, this idea that, well, I couldn't concentrate properly because of my contract. It's just, you know, is this kind of excuse making. And I worry about, you know, his relationships with coaches and how quickly things can change in his mind. You know, how quickly a situation can go from, well, this is good, to this is no longer acceptable to David Luiz. You know, you think about what happened at Chelsea. It's like, well, I just signed a brand new contract here and my second spell at the club. Nope, don't want to be here anymore. Let's go to Arsenal, because that opportunity came up. So, you know, I worry about it from that point of view. And I see a player who is, I know the sample size is smaller in terms of the amount of performances, but when you look at the mistakes, when you look at the penalties, when you look at the red cards, you know, we talk about players being late bloomers and everything else. There are players who, when they reach a certain point in their career, can just kind of go off a cliff. Their performance levels just go crazy. I'm trying to think of one. Maybe Gary Neville, somebody like that.
Yeah. You know, he can just hit you like that. I think with him, he's one of those that when he's just no in between. There's no 6 out of 10 game. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like a complete disaster, or he looks pretty good. You know, and you know, for Emery, he didn't do very well. For Arteta, he's done really well up until, you know, look, I say really well. He's done okay.
Yeah.
But when he's not, when he's emotionally stressed, like at Chelsea, for example, going back to his old club, he does silly things. He tries too hard. Myself and Tim would talk about this on the podcast. And when he makes a mistake, he then tries to chase after it and tries to fix everything himself and goes a bit Roy the Rovers and starts running after the ball. Where you need to calm down, stay in your structure and offer some leadership to the rest of the team. Don't compound your mistake. So when he makes a mistake, he makes two or three. You know, so,
yeah.
And that's what you don't expect from an experienced player that's won everything in the game. So you are taking a gamble with him. And I think a lot of responsibility is on him now to babysit this change, this rebuild. And I think he's the one player that's there to say, okay, I've done this before, follow me, guys. Well, yeah, we want to follow the good David Luiz. We don't want to follow the David Luiz that's all going to Man City, because that's not really professional in any way or form.
Well, look, we've talked about those contract renewals from a footballing perspective, and in the wider context of what Arsenal need to do. I think it was Edu who said earlier on today, let me see if I can just find this quote here. Boom, boom, boom. I should have had it up already, but Edu said that these guys are important players. They've been part of the long-term technical plan Mikel Arteta and I have developed. They bring the right balance to our squad. So I think we've already said with Suarez, he provides at least depth at the right-back position. With Pablo Mari, he gives us an option that we don't have, you know, on the left side of our defence, a left-footed central defender. You know, he's the biggest guy in the squad right now, and this is a squad which has lacked physical presence, so you can see that. David Luiz, Arteta's never played with a back three, but certainly Luiz is somebody who probably plays his best defensive football in a back three. So, you know, do you think there might be any possibility that that's a system we might use a bit more frequently?
See, I am not against it, but I argue with many people who are. I don't see Arteta doing that next year, but you never know. We're all trying to work out what his plan is going to be, and I'm really encouraged by the 4-3-3 that he used at Brighton. So,
yeah.
The Brighton game was a traumatic result, but tactically I thought it was really interesting, and how he used Saka and on that left-hand side as a left-wing fielder as such, somebody mirroring what Kevin De Bruyne did to us the week before. So I think that sounds really exciting, you know, potentially having 3-4s that don't have to do 30-yard doggies like, you know, Aubameyang does to get us back defending, because you've got midfield behind you.
Mm.
That structure may give him less work to do if he's around to enjoy that. So I like it. I like it. There's things you can do. You can change the actors in the play. But I like the structure of that. We also see the 4-2-3-1. Again, that suited Xhaka and that suited Ozil. They weren't available, so he went another way. Is he going to go to a back three? We don't know. We really don't know. So this rebuild is really opaque for us, because players are being dropped in, but we don't really know what style we're going to play. And the real driver will be who he adds on top of this, because that will define the style, who he's able to keep, who he's able to sell, and who he's able to use that cash to replace and upgrade. And then when we all see that player pool, we'll all go, okay, this is how we're going to play, and it suits more people than it doesn't. I think what he's done, which is a smart thing to do, is look at the group and try to put a system in place that suits them to sustain some results. And results give you serenity. They give you calmness.
Mm.
And you can see with two defeats, the Arsenal world is not serene right now, is it? So we need to get some results to get us back. And he's trying to put a system in place to do that. So, so many unknowns, Andrew, before we really understand if these moves are any way good or bad.
Yeah, I think there are some layers to the lack of serenity. I'm not sure it's entirely down to what's happened on the pitch. Of course, that really does set the marker for people's moods and everything else. I'm going to ask you about something now in a moment, but just this seems like almost an obvious thing to say, but do you feel like the decision making that we've seen in the last little while is substantially driven by what's going on in the world at the moment, COVID-19, the financial restrictions, the ability to get these deals done in a fairly easy way, because there is so much uncertainty about what the market is going to be like? So if, you know, under normal circumstances, let's say we might have been predisposed to moving away from David Luiz, the fact that we don't quite know what the market is going to be like means, okay, do we take the risk of going forward and replacing him in the market, or do we just do what's here and then see what things are like in January and see what things are like the following summer?
Yeah, it's almost like the devil you know versus the devil that you don't, and the cost of what you don't know. And I think that's David Luiz, depending on what he's being paid, could actually be cheaper than going out there and buying, you know, a 26-year-old centre-half in peak age at this time. You just don't know. Well, you don't know your revenues. You don't know when the crowd's going to be in the ground. We have around 3 million per home game, which we're not going to be getting. That could change. You know, we could have a partial attendance in the autumn and maybe January have a full attendance. Those things are not defined yet. So you literally cannot predict your revenues. So you can't predict your outlay. You know, you've got to look for opportunities. Now, you can debate if David Luiz is an opportunity, a positive one or not. But it's one that's there that they can do. They understand the standards around it. It's going to be a crazy transfer window. I look around at some of the deals that have been done. You look at Arthur going to Juventus for 78 million euros. That to me doesn't look right. You know, it looks crazy. If that's set in the market, I'm not sure if it is. That tells you that some people are still being stupid when it comes to financials. So I think football's going to look to generate cash as quickly as possible. And the teams who don't have that self-sustainable model like we do, they're going to grab the opportunities. Yeah. We've only got to look at what Chelsea are doing to see the validation of that.
Sure. I mean, that Arthur deal to Juventus, I mean, we're going to talk about some stuff. Yeah, crazy, but also like, it's like, what the fuck is going on there? What's happening here? What is the merry-go-round that's going to be set off by this particular move? But look, that's irrelevant. That'll come out down the road, I'm sure. We'll see what the impact of that will be on Barcelona and Juventus and the market, et cetera, et cetera. So let's sort of move on to the sort of concept of rebuilding, and I don't think you and I or pretty much anyone listening to this would disagree with the assertion that Arsenal are a club that is in A, either transition, or B, in need of a serious rebuild for the future. You know, we're going through a period certainly in our recent history where things are as bad as they have ever been in terms of results, in terms of the overall quality of the squad, the quality of the team, the ability to produce performances and all of those kind of things. So there is a need to address those issues. And as you've said, Mikel Arteta has talked about changing the culture. He's talked about, things like non-negotiables, what he expects from his players. And I think he's been clear as well that he expects those things from the club as well. But let's delve into it a bit. And it's something I wrote about on the blog today, that there is an influence at Arsenal that, to me, is a bit worrying. It's how we're doing deals, and it's who we are doing deals with. So we can talk about the qualities of Pablo Mari, and we can hope that he's going to be a very good player for us, but I don't think we can ignore the fact that his agent is a guy called Arturo Canales, who was the guy who represented Unai Emery when, surprisingly, he became the manager or the head coach of Arsenal. He's got a long relationship with Raul Sanjehi, fellow Spaniard, etc., etc. We have David Luiz, or Kia Jurabchian, of course, is the agent of David Luiz. He was right there in the picture, looming over Cedric Suarez when he signed his loan deal. We know that Kia Jurabchian is also the agent of Edu, who is our technical director, and he has watched games in our director's box with Edu and with Raul Sanjehi, who is our head of football. And we currently have two Kia Jurabchian players at the club. We have been linked heavily with others. You're looking at Willian from Chelsea, who has signed a contract till the end of the season with them, but wants to stay in London, apparently, and there's only one move that he can really make if that's going to happen. So does that worry you? Do those relationships at executive level worry you when it comes to properly judging our recruitment? Because I think we all want to think our club is doing the best it can for the club itself. And for me, it's hard not to look at the situation at the moment and wonder and worry if certain individuals are not making more or getting more out of these deals than Arsenal Football Club.
So, yeah. So, for me, this is a trust issue, right? So, who do you trust? So we're learning about our coaching setup. We're learning about our head coach. And we're starting to trust him. We look around and we listen to what other people say. We listen to what he says. We look at how he manages players and situations. And we're thinking, you know what? I want you to succeed. I sort of trust you. I trust that your motives are absolutely focused on the team, the club, the football pitch, and how we play. I like you. When I look at the guys off the pitch, they've got work to do for me. Because I look at some of the deals, and I'm again, should we care? But I do care. When we can't move in the marketplace as we should do, because we are financially not where we should be, and we are self-sustainable, every penny counts. So if I see wastage that doesn't allow us to rebuild properly, if I see contract renewal decisions with players getting, in my opinion, too much money and not giving us enough output, if I see good players and good servants walking out the door for free, if I don't see any contract signed for up until this week for nearly a calendar year, I look around and say to myself, are you working optimally? I look at our commercial numbers. I think, well, they're not going up. I look at everything around the club. It's been flatlining. So we've been flatlining on the pitch and we're flatlining off the pitch. Now, we have a coach in place which we find encouraging, but he's only as good as the executives around him. And I have question marks. So they need to deliver, and they need to deliver and reset this club really, really quickly, but or at least do it in a way that we really believe in, that's fiscally optimally good. And not throwing money away, potentially like it did with Suarez, potentially like it did with Denis Suarez last January.
Yeah.
And to miss out on Champions League by 1 point, that tells you how shocking that decision was. You know, so
yeah.
We need to be better. And we're just not at the moment. We're just not. And we have to then say to ourselves, do we trust these guys to deliver what we want to see? And I don't think any of us can say that we do yet. And I think, again, the onus is with them to build that trust with us. And that can only be done when the summer's over and the next January is over, and we judge them by what players come through the door and what players go out the door optimally.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, look, you can see, for example, at Wolves, where Jorge Mendes is heavily involved there, that, you know, an agent having a significant role on the makeup of a playing squad can be potentially a positive thing, maybe not in the long term. I'm not sure that it really works in the long term, because you've got all these relationships that need to be maintained forever and ever and ever for it to be, you know, a happy ending. Kia Jurabchin was Mark Hughes' agent when he was at Queen's Park Rangers. It kind of went badly there. It just feels to me dangerous.
It's, you know what, Andrew, I sometimes ask myself, do Arsenal need to be in bed with one agent? I mean, I don't mind if they're embedded with a number of agents, as long as they've got the ability to attract people to their project. Right? That's the key thing. Do we need to be so aligned with just one agent? And I think we're bigger than that. I think we're better than that. We need to be better than that. We need to be thinking differently than that. I look at Kier's stable of players, and there's a young player called Joelson at Sporting Lisbon that looks quite bright. And maybe they have to take some people to get to the jewel in the crown. I'm not sure. I'm guessing. Right? He's a 17-year-old kid. In a year's time, he could be special. And maybe we're going to get a link into that type of player. So sometimes you have to wear something to get to where you want to go. I understand how business works. And networking is a big part of making deals. But it can't be the only part. And it can't be done that's actually slowing down our rebuild, because we're throwing money into areas which are not going to give us any return. So I think the rebuild, the plan, we keep hearing this word, the plan. Ed, who spoke to the plan, the rebuild plan. Okay, I've heard you speak now, Ed. That's good. I know your role. So now I have to sit and watch and wait. But it doesn't mean I have to trust and like what's happening at the moment. And I don't quite trust it, although obviously, like all of us, we all want it to work.
Raul Sanyahi said that Arsenal have to outsmart the market, is what he said. You know, when he was talking about transfers and talking about our spending ability and talking about our ability to develop players, outsmart the market were the very words that he used. I'm not sure you can say you're outsmarting the market when you're signing players on loan and then paying loan fees and then signing the players on a permanent basis. That's not a good way of using your resources. And you touched on players who have left for free, and you think of Ramsey and Welbeck last season. You know, the contractual issues that exist at the club right now involving Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, Mustafi, Sokratis, Mesut Ozil, all with 12 months left on their deals. Bukayo Saka, the jewel in our academy crown. Arsenal have had months and months and months of lockdown, you know, with nothing else to do other than chat to that guy's agent and make something happen, and they have not made it happen. So I'm sort of concerned in that regard about, you know, what we say we want to do. I used to criticize Ivan Gazidis for this quite a lot. You know, he was a great talker. He would say things and you'd listen to him speak, and then afterwards you go, well, hang on a minute. And with Sanyehi, he has said a lot of things that we want to hear, like outsmarting the market, like we have a very good plan, like what was the one I was going to use when he talked about player contracts. You know, we have to address the issue of players going into the final year of their contracts. And here we are with a cluster of them, you know, years down the line, and he has not done anything to address that. And I just wonder... I wonder about the profiles of the people that we have in charge of, you know, this, what did you call it? The plan that Edu was talking about, the, what was it called? The rebuilding plan or whatever it might be. The long-term technical plan. That's the phrase. And I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, well, hang on, you know, Sanyehi is, a businessman, if you like. He's a mover and a shaker. He's a schmoozer. He's a boardroom guy. Edu is kind of more of an administrator. Yeah. You know? Who is driving the talent spotting side of this technical plan for us? I know we have Francis Kadjigao and what have you, but, you know, we were supposed to have one of the best talent spotters in the game as our technical director. That was Sven Mislintat. And, you know, I'm not saying everything Sven has done, everything Sven did was brilliant and everything Sanyehi has done is terrible. I'm not saying that whatsoever. There's always hits and misses when it comes to player recruitment. I just wonder, is there a gap there?
It feels like it. And I just feel as though there's one person missing. I'm sort of with you there, Andrew. I can see Arteta seems pretty, you know, laser focused what he wants to do. I do have a worry about the depth of his coaching staff at the moment, and I would like to see maybe a more experienced person in that staff to allow him to drive some of those conversations, to assist him in some of those conversations. If he needs it, he may not need it. He looks like a strong character. But then we lost Sven, and that was disappointing because I found his approach quite exciting. But I also understand that every single player of any sort of repute has an agent that we have to deal with. So there's no getting away from it.
Yeah,
it's just how you do it, how smart you do it, how efficient you do it. And I just don't think we're smart and efficient. I don't think our talent identification is good. If you have a long-term plan for Arsenal, yep, absolutely fantastic. Well, how about signing the 18-year-old kid that's absolutely flying? And by the way, every single team in Europe will want to take him.
Mm.
And he would look very nice in Liverpool or Man City's team right now because he can play left back, left wing, and left number eight in a 4-3-3. Sort of like you can see a role for him at Chelsea, Man City, or Liverpool really, really easily, and they are solid clubs at the moment in a better state than us on when it comes to talent, rebuild, financials. So get the kid signed up. Now these are the things by which we measure you on. So can we do that? The kid's been at Arsenal since he was 8 years of age. Can we not sign him? You know, can we not leave that to go on so long? So these are the things that we measure people by. And if you don't do those things efficiently, then you leave yourself open to question. And that's where we are. So talent identification, is it going to be agent-led? Is it going to be statistics-led, data-led? Who is defining that?
Yeah.
So Ed, who spoke about it today, for the first time, that is me and Mikael doing this. So now we can just sit back and have a look. But you know what? Please do not mess up that young kid. You know, that would be devastating to what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, It really would. It would, you know, I've said this before, but that's a sackable offence for me if that doesn't happen. And just to sort of, just to go back over what Mislintat said in terms of the approach, his approach when he was dealing with recruitment was quality data, video analysis, watching things live, scouting, using Arsenal's data company, StatDNA, that we've all heard about, you know. So he said it meant we acted independently. We knew all about markets and players in all positions that came into question. And part of the reason that he left, there was this power struggle behind the scenes, and Raul Sanyehi came out on top, and Mislintat said, the new leadership work more strongly with what they're offered from clubs or agents through their own networks. And some people might say, well, look, he's got an axe to grind, he's just being bitter. What he said was they work more strongly with what they're offered from clubs. It doesn't mean that they don't do that work, but it feels like the driving force behind the deals has been the contacts book, you know, this contact-led recruitment policy, which to me, you know, you're right to say you've got to deal with agents. You absolutely have to deal with the guys who are trying to get the best for their clients and, you know, clubs who pay agents to get the best deals for them, to get the most money in for the players that they're willing and they're open to selling. But for me, it feels like there is a significant piece missing within our recruitment structure. Like the Mislintat thing was like Sven, on a very basic level, Sven identifies and scouts the players, makes the recommendations. This is a player we want. And Raul's job as that guy was to go and get the deal done. What we're seeing is something completely different in that somebody is offering Arsenal players or giving us the opportunity to sign players because they're well connected to the agents, because it's cozy, because it's convenient. You know, when we needed a central defender in the summer because of what happened with Koscielny, there was no like, okay, well, look, who's out there? What are we going to do? Who's going to be the best player? It's let's call the agent of the technical director, prize this guy away from Chelsea with a shitload of money, and it's really easy and convenient deal to do. And what sort of surprised me most is the necessity, it seems anyway to me, of Sanyehi to need other agents to help broker these deals when that's the job that he is supposedly the main man to do.
I hear you there, Andrew. You know, we've spoken before about this. I worry about how vulnerable Arsenal are to opportunists. And when you have a close shop with people that are close to each other, there's opportunities there. There's opportunities there to not behave appropriately. And there's not. I just feel for a while now we've been, players have seen Arsenal as a soft touch when it comes to wages. Agents see Arsenal as a soft touch. And the football's a village. These things go around. So it's not just what you do, it's how you operate. And we operate in a stupid way on occasion. And it's been there. We are defined by players walking out the door. We are defined almost by last year contract deals. We spent so many summers worrying about players, whether they're going to sign or not. It doesn't seem to happen as regularly at other clubs. So this just tells you that when players want to go to a club, they don't just look at the name over the door. They look at how they're run. They look at how smoothly they're run. They're looking, can they trust their careers to that club? And I worry about Arteta's career until this settles down. If he doesn't get some financial support, I worry about his career at Arsenal. And some of these players have not been managed contractually. They've not been managed their careers on the pitch. And if we have an executive structure and a football structure, these are things that I judge them by. You know, if we're going to get a young kid from France, 18, 19 years of age, an outstanding talent, we've got to manage his career. If it goes well, the next young outstanding kid from France will want to come to his club. If we mismanage his career, if we put people around him that are on too much money, that don't support his football ambitions, because we've got deals going on with certain agents and we don't fully manage his career, it makes it harder for the coach to rebuild. It makes it harder for us to restore our reputation. I think it's really important, this, how we protect the jewels in our crown within the club, how we sustain their careers, support their careers, make sure that we get to where we want to get to. Don't get ourselves into a narrow mindset where we are looking at just a number of small agents to do deals based on people that they know. There's a football world out there. And Arsenal Football Club is huge, and use its name and brand to make sure that our breadth of contacts is broader than just one agent. We had a situation with Arsene Wenger. We called him the single point of failure. Let's not repeat that again when it comes to agents. Let's not repeat that. Let's have a depth of structure and a breadth of contacts and a breadth of approach when it comes to signing players, and then start to get it right more often than we have done in recent years.
Mm. So look, just very finally, we're playing Southampton tomorrow night. We're going into it off the back of a really disappointing defeat to Brighton. I think it's the first time in their history they've ever beaten Arsenal home and away. And that tells you something for sure. Man City, not a great deal we can glean from that particular game, apart from some sort of general reinforcement about how big the gap is between us and them. And we all understand and know the reasons for it. But looking at what's left of this particular season, and I'm sort of talking more about from a league point of view, I think we can try and be optimistic and hope that we can do something in the FA Cup. And look, a trophy is a wonderful thing, regardless of what people might think of the FA Cup. And the benefits of winning a cup for Mikel Arteta and for this group of players would be huge, not just in terms of their their profiles and everything else, but for next season as well. There is European football that comes out of winning the FA Cup. But from a league perspective, what are you looking for between now and the end of the campaign? I mean, do you think top six is realistic, or is this I don't want to say an opportunity, but a way to sort of start putting in place some of the foundations that we want to take into next season?
Yeah, I think if we lose to Southampton, I think we should be looking towards next season. I think, I'll be straight with you. I was really positive before the lockdown, and I was really positive during the lockdown because there was lots of good noises coming out of the club. So the Man City game, what really hurt me for that game was not so much the result, but the way it happened, the repeat issues that we see on the pitch, almost like deja vu. But then we go into the next game against Brighton, and then we lose potentially our goalkeeper, which we thought at the time would be for a long time. And you look at the damage to the squad and the amount of injuries that we have, that positivity is now gone. So I thought we'd get top five, Angie, I'll be straight with you. I'm quite optimistic before the lockdown. Mm. After seeing those two games, I'm thinking, crikey, we've got some issues here. It's not going to happen. I'm not quite there yet with the, should we just duck out of Europe completely? And just rebuild. Although if that was to happen, I wouldn't cry myself to sleep neither. I do think Arsenal needs a reset. It needs a reset. It needs time to focus on maybe less competitions. We have to recognise we have a young, talented group of players that are unknown where their ceilings are. We need to surround them with the right set of older players, with the right set of motivation, with the right set of skill sets that allow us to go away from home and compete more regularly. I mean, I don't know what our record is since Alexis Sanchez left the club. You want to use that name as a milestone. Mm. But I want to know how many away games that we've won since he left. It's those type of characters, those people that compete, that want to compete, particularly when the sun is not shining and the environment's different, away from home. We need to have that ability because we don't get the 3-4 wins on the trot. So we're always reacting to desperate situations, and we don't have that serenity I talk about of continued results. So if we don't win at Southampton, which, let's be honest, it's 50-50, isn't it? And if we don't win there, we need to think about really, not starting again, but maybe just developing a pattern and a way of playing, regardless of the players that are in the shape. And then that's use this period to get ready for next season.
All right. Well, look, let's hope we do have some serenity on Thursday evening / Friday morning when we'll have to go over whatever happens at St. Mary's against Southampton. But look, as always, pleasure to talk to you. You can find Clive regularly on the Arsenal Vision podcast, which I hugely recommend as well. We will chat to you again soon, Clive. Thanks a million.
Thanks a lot, mate.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Thank you very much indeed to Clive. You can find him on Twitter at ClivePAFC. That's at ClivePAFC. And of course, as I said, on the Arsenal Vision podcast. Right. I'm not going to tear the arse out of it for this particular episode. Again, though, thank you very much indeed, as always, for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting. If you want to give us a review or rating on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or whatever the hell it's called now, please feel free to bang out those 5 stars. James and I will be here on Friday morning. We'll be looking back on the Southampton game. Please, can we just have a bit of
serenity now?
Catch you on the next one. Until then, cheers. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.